Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
You are listening to Missed Apex Podcast. We live F1. Welcome to Missed Apex Podcast, powered by SpannersReady.com, bringing you F1 blogs, reviews, podcasts, and occasionally news. Today's episode is called In Off the Cushion. I'm your host, Spanners Ready, and I'm joined by an esteemed panel and a bustling chat room on YouTube for our last in-season podcast of 2016. We're switching to fortnightly shows after the next couple of weeks. I hope you've enjoyed being with us this season and that you'll stay with us for next season, but more about our future plans towards the end of the show, so please hang around and we'll lay out our winter schedule for you and how to keep up with them. For those of you just finding us, we are an independent podcast hosted by SpannersReady.com, the home of Spanners Log. Stop sniggering. We aim to bring you your race review before your Monday morning commute. We might be wrong, but we're first. This show is safe for work. No naughty words here. We're keeping it clean so you can play this with kids in the background, or in the car, or at work. Joining me today is, from Formula Spy, Chris Rainbow Sparkles Stevens. How's it going, Chris?
It's going great, mate. How are you doing?
I'm all right. Are you making another one of your stellar live radio appearances?
Well, actually, live is the only true part of that. Stellar, that's the, yeah, maybe.
I mean, it's 3 a.m, isn't it? Like, it's a start, but let's be honest, it's 3 a.m.
You can tell I'm pretty tired doing it. So you just start mumbling.
If you don't mention Missed Apex Podcast on it, you're dead to me.
I'm willing to take the risk.
Next up, we've got Jeansy, Alex Van Jean, corporate chauffeur driver extraordinaire. How's it going, Jeansy?
I'm doing all right, Spanners. How are we all this afternoon after fun and games?
I'm devastated, not only with the result, but how much social media have you had since the end of the race?
Oh, constant abuse from all the haters.
And let's say it was from both sides. Now, I saw some appalling things online today, and it's very hard not to get sucked into it when you're that passionate. We've got Downforce Radio commentator Ryan Ferret-Ferris.
Hey, what's up?
I guess you're happy as a Nico Rosberg inverted commas fan circa 2013.
Yes, I am very happy that he deserved everything that he got.
Who did you support in 2012, just out of interest?
2012, I supported Hamilton when Hamilton was actually still a likeable character.
And the knives and forks you can hear in the background finishing off his tea is Downforce Radio boss, guru, bow down to the legend of Jake Sanson.
Watcher!
How's it going? Which side of the fence were you on today? Who were you hoping would win the championship?
I didn't really vote for one or the other. I just wanted the championship to be decided in the right possible way, you know, the best possible way it could have gone. And to be fair, I got exactly what I wanted. You know, it was a great fight, so I'm happy.
Bit of excitement. Let's go on to the race then. Didn't work out how I wanted it. Rubbish. Well, as a Lewis Hamilton fan, As some of you might have figured out from listening to Missed Apex, I was hoping he was going to win the title. And the best option for that, to do that, was to have Max Verstappen and Daniel Ricciardo right up alongside him, Chris. But we were dashed straight away as he managed to... Well, he collected himself against Nico Hülkenberg, really.
Yeah, he complained on the radio that Hülkenberg kind of didn't give him any space. But I have to disagree with that, because I think there isn't really much more Hülkenberg could have done. That was down to Verstappen to complete that move. And yeah, it was his own fault, but he made a quite miraculous recovery.
He was almost taking that line as if Hülkenberg wasn't there, really, though, wasn't he? And he was quite surprised. He was trying to go all the way out to the edge of turn one. Looks like Alex is posturing for a say on that.
I think he came in with too much speed, and I just think he understood, and because he was on full lock when you look at the replay, and I think he's just touched the rear end of it, and in those cars, they're always on the edge of adhesion, so I think he took this little touch, and round she went.
I did find it funny how, actually, like you, like's already said, the fact that he was literally going straight for the apex, then hit Hülkenberg, and then complained on the radio going, oh, Hülkenberg gave me no room, guys.
I think he gave him all the room, to be fair. But it felt like then, Chris, that the best chance had gone, because I know this is controversial, but Kimi's garbage, and he hasn't overtaken anyone since 1746. So it was very unlikely that he was going to be the challenging force that was going to knock Rosberg off the podium.
You can't say that Kimi's washed up. He's outqualified Vettel 11-10 this season.
Yeah, but he hasn't outraced him 12 times out of 10, has he? Let's be fair. Come on.
Ferrari's not exactly had the most consistent season. They've been a little bit all over the place. But on qualifying pace, Jake, Kimi's outqualified Vettel on qualifying pace.
So he has the attention span of 5 minutes. Yay. Okay, that's great. What we really need for Ferrari to win like races and Constructors' Championship is for him to have the attention span of an hour and 45 minutes. That's what we need, actually. No points for quali.
But, you know, Sebastian Vettel, he's a four-time world champion. So how do we sort of conflate this? Because if you want to say that Kimi's been beating Vettel this season... You know, we're saying...
In one lap. I'm not impressed with qualifying. I'm sorry. It's how you go in the race. That's where I get my kicks from. And to be honest, Kimi just doesn't seem to have the attention span over the course of a full race distance to be able to compete with Vettel on with the same equipment.
Jeansy.
And I think... Yeah. Oh, go on.
No, I was going to say, Jeansy, I just get the feeling that actually both drivers and the team are all being terrible. So it's actually hard to pick out a winner out of that lot.
Well, arguably, sort of Spanner's kind of just touched on that, but arguably it's more Vettel's been rubbish in Q3 this season, and Kimi's just been doing what he should be doing.
You could have ended that statement with Vettel has been rubbish, full stop, because to
Which
be honest,
is also true.
Most of the year he has been, and I don't even know why. He's got no reason to be rubbish.
Do you know why
would he be?
I said on social media, I said, well, maybe Kimi's just looking good because... Vettel's not all that. And then somebody replied with, yeah, four titles, mate. I'm like, oh yeah, no, I forgot about that. How long ago does that seem? No, because from the moment he stopped being the world champion, though, he's not really impressed since that moment, has he?
No, not really, to be honest. No, he hasn't. And I think this actually says more about Ferrari than it does Vettel, because let's be honest, Fernando Alonso is still, in my opinion, one of the best three drivers on the planet. And he couldn't drag Ferrari to a world title in 5 years. And now Vettel, who is, again, one of the best three drivers on the planet right now, can't drag Ferrari to a title either. So I think it actually says more about Ferrari than it does about either Vettel or Alonso.
So that did dash the hopes of Lewis having enough people between him and Rosberg to win the championship. And even as the Red Bull of Max Verstappen was making its way back through the field, wasn't it interesting to see that he couldn't outdrag Grosjean out of, I think, turn four, basically into the first straight? He got ahead, he got the traction, he got ahead initially, then that Haas pulled away, and that's pretty damning indication for the people who keep saying that Renault are about to burst onto the scene and become the dominant tyre performer, or at least catch up, Ryan.
But Grosjean did have DRS. I was thinking, Jesus, that Haas is quick. And then I thought, wait a minute, the letterbox is open on it. So I thought, okay, that makes sense.
Also, we got to remember the Red Bull's got a hell of a lot more downforce, therefore more drag, and the Haas has almost no downforce, so that also plays a big contributing factor to it as well.
Vortex Motio was telling us that at this track, having low downforce is only an advantage during qualifying, and during the race, what you want is actually quite a lot of downforce planted on.
That's an argument for the for looking after your tires, yeah. But it does kind of depend on you know, where you are on the grid, because I mean, you'll see that if one of the top drivers has a poor qualifying, they'll trim some wing off to make the car quicker in a straight line, so it's easier to overtake.
And Massa finished his career, Jake, by skinning Bottas midway round the lap and getting that ninth place back. Yes, we know Bottas had an issue. Shh, don't ruin it.
No, it was nice. It was a nice way for Massa to bow out with that feisty element of, you know, gutsy, gung-ho driving that we've always seen from Massa. He does have that ability to pull it out of the bag when it's needed. And to be fair, after the misery of seeing him crash out in Brazil, it was really, really nice to see him get some points in the final race of the year. That's the right way to go out.
And the whole track was racy, actually. It's not. I know people think it's a Tilkadrome and they don't like it, but it's delivered good racing in general, Alex, maybe the last couple of years aside.
Yeah, it's not a bad circuit for racing because there's lots of corners that go that mean you can defend in one place but still overtake somewhere else. So it gives... as Martin Brundle describes them, error-making corners. So those two chicanes at the end of the second straight leaves it open to having a switch back and having a go at overtaking. So it is a good circuit. It is. It's just sometimes hasn't pulled out the best racing for some reason, but today was really, really good. There was fighting up and down the field. But I think Massa was kind of forgotten about, though, through most of the UK stuff anyway.
A lot of it were.
From what I was watching, he was kind of forgotten about.
Well, it was almost like in Brazil, that was his farewell, wasn't it? That's how they treated it.
Yeah, this weekend was all about Jenson Button. And yeah. I think as Jenson said, he's a bit gutted. He didn't announce his retirement before, and it's a retirement. It's definitely not sabbatical. Didn't announce his retirement before Silverstone, because then he could have had a proper send-off at home.
Yeah.
Even the GP2 guys struggled to race, though, on that Yas Marina circuit. I mean, if they're struggling, then that really is a sign, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, the way you can make that so much better if you just took out the chicane at 5 and 6 and had them go straight and then into the hairpin, it would immediately just improve the racing because you're coming off of a corner quicker.
But I think there are worse tracks, though, to be fair, and it gets a little bit of unfair criticism, I think, simply because it's become fashionable to slate the Tilkadromes.
No, I disagree. I've never been a fan of the circuit, to be honest. Yeah, there are worse ones on there, but these are supposed to be the best circuits in the world.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry, Jake, just to interrupt you there. A special mention goes to, and the people in the Missed Apex Facebook group will know this already, Darren Johnston, who has every single race recreated the track in Scalextric, and he puts it up there to be assessed by the rest of the Facebook group. And there's always, like, for Brazil, the Brazil one was fantastic. The first comment was, yeah, but what about the elevation, mate? So
that's where those massive stacks of Autosport magazine and Motorsport News magazine come into play. You just have to position them exactly the right way. That's all.
So as soon as I see the Scalextric come on, I'm like, yay, I wonder who's going to nitpick first. But we've really enjoyed that, Darren. So that's been a great feature of the season. So
can we the week before races in future, can we go over to his and just like do a feature filming racing around the track in Scalextric? Can that just be like a part of 2017, please?
He That'd may be in America, but if the Downforce Radio budget stretches, unlike to travel.
Okay. I will charter the Learjet.
Two retirements early on. First of all, Kevin Magnussen retired. Renault didn't seem devastated. I guess that's not their man anymore.
I don't think Kevin seemed devastated, to be honest. That's over. Great. Off to Haas.
Now, Ryan, I know you had an opinion, though, because in the end, I think they had a choice of going for K-Mag, but they didn't offer him what he wanted and they weren't willing to compromise and they went for Jolyon Palmer. You feel that was the right or wrong decision?
Yeah, I think it's the right decision to go for Palmer, because if you think about it, K-Mag has been at McLaren, did a season and one race, replacing Alonso for being injured in Australia last season. And then also he's done this season. And he's not really shown, considering Palmer has just came along for his first season. He started a little bit behind, but then through the season, he sort of gained confidence and sort of found himself doing better than K-Mag. So it almost seems like K-Mag has almost found a peak, or it might not stay at that peak. He might carry on once he gets to Haas, but it seems that Palmer was getting better and better, so he seems the person to go for.
I do agree with you about Palmer, but I also think that you can't properly assess their driving given that the car that they're driving is really not ideal. It's basically the 2015 Lotus with a Renault engine in it. So I think maybe 2017 will be a fairer representation of their driving.
Okay, from the chat room then, discussing whether Vettel's all that or not. Let's see, who was it? Paul Wright says, I think the regs at the time played into Seb's way of driving, very planted with that blown diffuser. So maybe he is a driver of his time, very much how Mark Webber had the opposite, where he got caught out with a driving style required that he didn't have, you know, despite being an excellent and fast racer. Hannah Hassel says, Ryan has got a hell of a lot of gin in him. That is standard. That's a feature. That's not a bug. That's how we came out of the packaging, unfortunately. Gary Gerhard says, so over Massa since 2009. And on the gas, who earlier criticized us for not having any Americans on the podcast, by the way, this is the first Missed Apex podcast without an American. But he mentioning about Abu Dhabi says, the circuit is better if you have Lewis Hamilton acting as a safety car, bunching up the field. Oh no, apologies, that is Blackout 19 with that comment. So let's go on to a more pertinent retirement, which was the wheel falling off of Jenson Button's car one final time. He ultimately had no grip at the front right hand corner.
I personally feel that it was quite amusing that Jenson made the comment that this is actually his first car failure in the 7 years that he's been with McLaren. I actually thought, hang on a minute, I'm going to sit back and look. And I actually went and looked through the results when he said that. I went, do you know what? He's right. He is right. That is actually the first time Jensen's car has actually failed in any way, shape or form in the 7 years during a race. And that's pretty incredible when you consider, you know, how good McLaren have been to him. But he just seemed so over Formula One. He seemed completely over Formula One at the end of the race, and I found that really quite refreshing. I don't know why, but we seem to drag out these retirements and it goes on and on and on forever. But Jenson at the end of the Grand Prix, you know, he was over Formula One. I've done that. It's dead. It's over. I'm going to carry on with my life. And he did say, you know, this is where the real action is, right here with my family, with my friends, with the rest of my life. I can't wait to see him going into the World Rallycross Championship if that's where he decides to go next, because every single rallycross meeting is going to be so much better than Formula One without Jenson Button in it. He's just going to make that sport so much better for being there. I can't wait.
Did Jenson actually have a car failure, or did he clunk that curb far too hard, which is what broke his
car? Question. Yeah, question.
I was going to say, it looked like a crash. Ryan?
I believe it was a car. It was a car failure, considering, you know, everyone else has gone over that curb, and it didn't look too hard. It sort of seemed something that the tyres would be able to soak up, but potentially the wishbone could have had some form of stress fracture that you wouldn't have been able to see, and so it would have just gone like that.
Yeah, but as to Jake's point about him seeming fed up with F1, I almost wish it had come a couple of seasons earlier. If he'd have left two seasons earlier, he'd have had just the same amount of praise, just the same amount of plaudits for a great career. But he has come across very bitter and very tired in a lot of those interviews. And yes, it's interesting to see it, and he's always carried it off with a gentlemanly smile. But in a way, it's been kind of sad to see his obvious despair and frustration at the situation he's in.
Yeah, I think he's glad to be going. You know, it's interesting. I managed to have an interview with him at the end of last year. And even then, on the night he announced that he was staying with McLaren for another season in London, it seemed as though it was a bit haphazard. It was kind of, well, we'll do it for another year. It's fine. And, you know, when you're thinking like that as a Formula One driver, you shouldn't be doing it personally, because, you know, you invest too much time, too much energy and too much of your passion into something that you haven't got 10/10 of your commitment for. So to be fair to Jenson, I'm glad that he's retiring when he doesn't feel like he wants to carry on with it. You know, if you push it beyond that point, Michael Schumacher potentially trying to relive past glories, you end up, you know, just kind of tainting your name to a certain degree. And I don't think Jensen Jensen's not that kind of person who will do that. So I like the fact that he's ended now. I really can't wait to see what he's going to continue on with the rest of his career with. But it's a nice end of an era. You know, 17 years at the top of his game, he's been a legend.
I'm probably going to be in the minority here, but I'm not bothered that he's going. I think he probably should have gone at the end of 2012.
2012?
Yeah, I think he'd have had a bit more dignity then because he did well in 2012. Wow. He's done nothing really ever since.
But how could he have known exactly how far McLaren were going to fall? Because they were falling and falling, even with the Mercedes engine. And then they came out with that statement saying, oh, well, we'll never get anywhere with, not being a works team. That argument would have been great had they been beating Williams and Force India at the time. But they weren't even doing that. Then they took on the Honda engines with all that promise and stayed planted to the back of the grid. Jensen couldn't have known that. I'm certain that him and Alonso have been fed a constant drip feed of positivity and any day now.
Yeah, but Jensen would have had that back in the Honda days when he was there saying any day now, which if Honda had stayed, it would have happened. But I don't know. I think he's moaned constantly since the end of 2012, since 2013 started, and it was never really there for him. And then the car was not very good through 2014 and has dropped off the face of a cliff. Yes, in 2 years' time, I think that car will come back, but I don't see the benefit to Jensen. He's not the rain master that everybody thinks he is. He doesn't make these wonderful calls that everybody thinks he does. I'm just not a Jensen fan. I know I'm going to get slated for it, but I just never have been a Jensen fan, and I think it's way past time for him to go.
Is Jensen a bit like James Hunt in not his off-track activities, obviously, but in terms of his on-track? Is there a lot of correlation between Jensen and Hunt in terms of, you know, when things are going right for him, they're going really, really well, and then the rest of the time it's just kind of, well, we'll just keep it going as long as it can go, and, you know, we'll drag a decent performance out of the bag when it's needed, etc., etc.? Is there a similarity there, do you think?
I'm not quite certain with that. I mean, from a driving point of view, I don't think so. I think James Hunt was a much more naturally talented driver than Jensen is. But I think Jensen kind of sits where I think Palmer is and where those guys are, where they're good enough to be around, and you put them in the right car in the right situation, like Rosberg, and they'll win a championship. Undeservedly.
Don't jump the gun.
Then it will
Oh, careful.
And then everything will fall in their way. But I don't think they are the naturally talented drivers who are going to go out there and make themselves, if that makes sense.
I hope Hannah Hassel lives nowhere near you, because I think you're going to get flunking sometime soon.
the chat room aren't really having a go at you. I think they're expressing more sympathy, because Clara Tetley, hello Clara, says Jensen shouldn't have stuck around. Ron Dennis's treatment of him last season during contract renewal was appalling. And actually, he hasn't been treated well in that regard a couple of times. So, you know, maybe he could have taken that as a hint, Chris, and bowed out earlier.
Jensen should have just moved teams, maybe even at the end of 2014, because...
Williams for the win.
Anywhere, because it just would have been... It would have been an improvement, and he would have had certainly a lot more life to him, if that makes sense.
And On the Gas says, Van Gene is way wrong, especially him, as he races himself, and for any driver to be in F1... is the place to be. All right, then. Let's move on. Let's talk about how the race started to filter out, because we had both Red Bulls on the slower tyre to extend them out longer, but Max Verstappen stayed out longer than we could have possibly imagined, Chris, really, and he made a real nuisance of himself by getting in between the two Mercedes.
Yeah, well, it was all a clever rouge to get him back up to the head of the field. Of course, having dropped right down to the back, he sort of recovered to about 10th place, just as the leaders were coming into the pits. And we didn't expect those super soft tyres to last much more than 10 laps, but he really, really stretched out that stint. He actually doubled the length of that stint, which is really, really... I mean, those tyres were crying enough when he did come in, but it brought him right back into play.
And it was interesting, because he slotted in between the two Mercedes... Rosberg didn't have the pace for whatever reason to get past, and he was being told, no, no, you need to get past him now. But Hamilton, who did have the pace, wasn't disappearing off into the distance, because I guess he was just keeping a check on the situation behind him. But he was driving so slowly, his tyres were out of the thermal window, and he was being warned about graining.
Well, what we've got to remember is that Nico needed a podium to win the world championship if Lewis won the race. And if you are, you know, sat behind Max Verstappen, who you've had a couple of coming acrosses with during the season, like Martin said in commentary, you're going to treat him like the back end of a donkey. So he didn't want to get caught up in an unnecessary scrap if he was already in a position to win the championship. Lewis, meanwhile, isn't in a position to win the world championship. So what does he do? He starts backing them up. And in the hope that, you know, either Vettel or Raikkonen or Ricciardo is going to come in and take that position away from Rosberg and give him the position he needs to win the championship.
Sorry, Alex, I thought you were trying to get in there, mate.
I was before, but then Chris went off, so I thought I got missed. So, I think the only reason Max managed to make that stint go as long as it would do is because Lewis was holding everybody up. If Lewis wasn't holding everybody up so much and going so off the pace, I don't think that strategy would work for Max. It was just down to the fact that Lewis was going so slowly that he kept him in the fight.
I don't think he was even at 60% of what he could have driven at.
No.
And it's so pathetically slow.
Yeah, it was so funny because before the race, they were saying, would you back him up? And he was like, no, that's not practical. That's not really something that I could think in the back of my mind. And then instantly it was like, ooh, you liar. This was your plan all along.
Any other race of the year and the Mercedes would have won this race by miles.
Yeah.
I think they were further ahead in this race than they have been for most other races. I think the Mercedes boys put everything on this car to show what the car could do, but Lewis had other plans for that.
The team said, though, that if either one of you tries backing the other one up, then we're just going to pit the other car and you're going to get undercut.
Which is why he didn't do the serious backing up until after the last pit stop.
Exactly.
Okay, well, the other contender for getting in between the two Mercedes was Daniel Ricciardo, but he got stuck between the Ferraris. And Jake, again, they get caught out by the undercut. Ferrari out-tacticked by someone. I, for one, was massively shocked. It just feels like taking on Ferrari with strategy is like punching a sick kitten at the moment.
It's embarrassing. You know, this is one of the greatest teams in the history of the sport. This is the team that's been there since the second race in Formula One's history. And they just can't get strategy right. What is the deal over at Maranello? I just can't understand it. This is supposed to be the wealthiest team in the sport, the most intelligent, the most experienced, the most passionate. And at the moment, they look like a NASCAR team rushing around trying to do Formula One. And that is quite embarrassing when you consider how many thousands and thousands of people worldwide are rooting for them to be a little bit more professional once in a while. It's shocking.
They called Vettel's strategy perfectly, though. Did exactly what they did in Mexico, which was extend that middle stint so you can have nice, fresh.
Yeah, tires. And that was all down to Vettel. That was all down to Vettel being able to use that middle stint to his advantage. He was so, so clever with it. And to be fair, I think it's the first time all year that I've been wowed by Vettel. I've seen him do okay in recent weeks, but that race in particular, wow, he was just absolutely fantastic.
I agree with you when you say it's all down to Vettel. I can believe you, because how many radio calls have we heard where Sebastian has overruled the call from the pit wall and done his own thing and stayed out extra laps? I can totally buy that that's him taking the bull by the horns and saying, no, I'm not coming in, although we didn't hear that today.
Yeah, I can see your point on that one. I mean, I don't know what it is. To be honest, I really, really wish that we were seeing an incredible Ferrari at the moment, because, you know, they've gone through 6 or 7 years of average behavior as a race team. And yet they've got, you know, a 4-time world champion on their team. They've got Kimi Raikkonen, a world champion on their team. They've had Fernando Alonso in their team. And they just don't know what they're doing. This is Ferrari, for goodness sake. This isn't a midfield team. This is Ferrari. This is like going back to the early 90s when you had Prost and Alesi, two of the best drivers on the grid. And they were just dragging that car around the circuit as if it had broken legs. It was just appalling. And it looks like we're going through that again now.
Okay, so we've covered Ferrari, Massa's retirement, Max Verstappen's spin, Jenson Button, the Skelectric track from the Facebook group. I think that's about it. I think we're covered, guys. I think we can pretty much just end it there and just say goodnight, everyone. Nothing really happened after. And here's where it got interesting. So Christian Horner gives a veiled, not so veiled message over to the Mercedes pit wall to say, hey, do you know what? If Hamilton had slowed down a little bit, we actually could have got, you know, both of our guys out in front of him. And Christian Horner was really championing all weekend almost. He was just talking about what Red Bull could do to take the championship from Nico Rosberg. I kind of got a feeling, Chris, that Red Bull were really gunning somehow, either for Lewis Hamilton or against Nico Rosberg.
I don't think it's that. I think they just know that in a straight dogfight, they're not going to beat the Mercedes. So if Lewis tries a tactic like that, they've got an opportunity to sneak a second place or even maybe a win.
Okay, well, all this stuff that happened set us up for a fantastic final third, and I think you'll agree that that really is the big dirty news of the weekend. Big dirty news. That's me. I do that bit.
That's brilliant. I love that.
Well, not the piano. That is my beautiful
favorite
wife.
Bit of the show. That I love that.
That's my beautiful wife. I will credit Nicola from Cherry Sunday, who provided a lot of the
jingles.
Wow,
she's got a deep voice.
I'll admit I did do the vocal, but she is a classical pianist and very, very proud of her. I'll get her on here to say hello to you one day. Okay, so the big chat before the race was, would Lewis Hamilton back up Nico Rosberg into the pack? And we found out it was a resounding yes. Before the end of that last stop, I genuinely thought there was a chance he was just going to disappear off into the distance, to the point that I was actually getting angry with him. Look, I'm biased. I was getting angry going, what are you doing? Disappearing is not going to win you the championship. And even on the Channel 4 commentary, they were saying, well, he's proving the point. He can leave here satisfied that he was the better man and that he'd won this race on pace. I was like, that's not what you do. You can't give up without a fight. And sure enough, as soon as the final stop ended, he did. He backed Nico Rosberg up a hell of a lot, as much as he possibly could. So there's 2 points here. The first of which is, Jake, Mercedes have done such a good job that when one of their drivers deliberately drives as slowly as he possibly can, the rest of the field can't catch up enough to overtake.
That is officially how embarrassing Formula One's rule book has got. If Lewis is backing up Nico and the rest of the field that much and they still can't keep up, wow, get back to the drawing board for 2017, guys, because that just shows you how incredible the Mercedes is compared to everything else on the grid. And it's actually a little bit shameful that Formula One is that in that kind of position when you consider that Lewis was not even driving at 50% of his capability and nobody could keep up with him. They still weren't getting close enough. It's appalling. I mean, Rory Mackay has just written on the stream, Sky was saying it was 9 seconds slower than his pole time. I mean, that's slower than GP2 pace. Yeah. I mean, yet nobody could keep up with him.
Well, there's two ways to look at it. You can blame the rule book and you can blame the other teams for not getting up to speed because they've had time in this rules era to do it. Or you can take your hat off and say that Mercedes have been an amazing development machine day one.
Yeah, I mean, we criticise Mercedes for being too dominant, but hang on a minute. Yeah. McLaren 1988, that's one of the great legendary racing cars. The Williams from 1992, that's one of the great masterpieces of Formula One. The McLarens from 1998, well, you never complained about any of those when they were dominating and they were just great masterpieces of engineering. Why isn't the 2016 Mercedes a masterpiece of engineering? Because you've got a short attention span, that's why. I do think, though, it's very, very interesting the way that it's played out. Everybody I looked on Facebook is either criticizing Rosberg because the only reason he won the title is because Hamilton blew his engine at Sepang, or Hamilton is not a very worthy contender because he backed up into Rosberg. These are racing drivers. What do you think? They're just going to keel over and let it all happen? No, they're going to fight for every single inch of every single second of every single lap of a motor race. Otherwise, they shouldn't be Formula One drivers in the first place. Get over it.
Okay, so that's the question we're asking, Chris. Is that tactic okay? Firstly, is it cheating? And secondly, is it sporting?
It's not cheating. It's a different question as to whether it's sporting. I wouldn't say it was, but it all comes down to, you know, has Lewis put himself before the team? Because he was instructed by not only his engineer, but by Paddy as well, to increase his pace because there was a risk of Vettel coming in and spoiling the show for Mercedes and potentially costing them a win. Now, Lewis said after the race that, oh, I had it all under control. I had never had any doubt that I wasn't going to win that race and all that. But of course, the team don't know that.
I'm sorry, Chris. I've got to disagree. You have this idea about it being not sporting, but let's go back to 1994. Michael Schumacher steering into the side of Damon Hill when his car was already broken, stopping Damon from winning the title. And yet, oh, he's a great world champion. He didn't get any points taken away from him. Now, how can you then make the argument that Lewis didn't even get in the same bit of tarmac as Nico Rosberg? He just backed him up and held up the race. And yet, that's unsportsmanlike. Grow up, everyone.
I do kind of think that was kind of unsporting from Michael that day.
Of course it was, but everybody's still saying, oh, he's a 7-time world champion. Yeah, brilliant.
That is slightly ridiculous.
Nah, I don't think he was brilliant.
It comes back. Let's go back to Malaysia 2013 when Vettel ignored team orders.
Mm.
And then we had this debate about whether is he a pure racing driver because he's decided to take matters into his own hands and, you know, go out and fight for that win. Or is he putting himself before the team? Is he too arrogant and that? I'd say back then there wasn't a championship on the line. Mm-hmm. It's a really tough debate. And at the moment, I'm still in two minds about it. I can't come down on one side about it just yet.
I personally believe that the fact that Rosberg won the championship is not just down to Sepang. And I've been thinking about this for a while. Sepang could be an argument. Yes, if he'd won that race, he probably would have been the world champion. But in Baku...
No. You're skipping ahead. We're skipping ahead.
I'll get back in.
Let's focus on this race. Alex, was it an unsporting... Was he a bit of a git for what he did?
I was sat watching the race with another racer, and both of us were saying it's exactly what we would do.
There you go.
Because it's the only opportunity he has, a bar smashing him off the circuit, which isn't his style or anybody's style these days because you get caught now. To a way to win the race. The only thing he could possibly do was back them up. Martin Brundle had been saying it all weekend. Christian Horner had been saying it all weekend. Lewis didn't want to allude to what he was going to do, but it was obvious. There's the only thing he could do was get pole, which is what he set there to do, got it, and hold him up and hope that he gets swallowed up by the other boys. Because let's put it this way, between the two Red Bull drivers, the two Ferrari drivers and the two Mercedes drivers, he is the worst in wheel-to-wheel camp combat. I don't think anyone will deny that. And he would have got swallowed up by them. I think Lewis should have backed him up more in the first 6-7 laps before the first pit stop. But I don't think...
The problem he faced there is that if he'd have done it then, the team would have been onto him and may well have not given him the right strategy. So I think they really didn't want him to do that. In the chat room, Clara Tetley says, very unsportsmanlike and disrespectful to the team. And she says that as a Lewis Hamilton fan. Othnell says, Clara, what did he do wrong that was unsporting? Why did Rosberg simply not try to pass him? Ryan.
He did nothing wrong whatsoever. Sorry, Ryan.
I don't know. I feel that, obviously it wasn't cheating, but I have somewhat feel that it wasn't 100% good sportsmanship. I mean, I don't know why. It was the only option. Yes, it was the only option to do, but the likes of, at the end of the race, Sebastian Vettel said, no, I don't think it was good sportsmanship him doing that. And I think Mika Hakkinen also said it as well at some point.
It's a bit like in football. When you're defending a one-goal lead, and you park the bus. That's exactly what Lewis did.
He
completely and utterly parked the bus. And what else could he do? Yeah, okay, he could have disappeared off into the distance, probably won that race by 10 seconds, but what would he have gained from it? absolutely nothing. He had to do something. There was no sporting way or perceived sporting way that anything else could have happened. He had to do that, and it wasn't a dodgy tactic. If any other driver, be the fact that I like them or not, had done that thing, I'd done the same thing. But I bet if it was the other way around, Lewis probably would have got past Nico.
There is definitely that element to it. And I just say to the chat room, we understand that this is a heated topic, but let's not resort to personal insults. That's purely for me against Chris. Chris.
Right. I forgot what point I was going to make now.
It's got that sense. No.
I've got it. Can you cut this bit out?
Again, I swear.
Right. So it's interesting what you say, Alex, about it being the other way around. Because had it been the other way around, do you think we'd still be having the same debate about whether it was right or wrong?
Well, knowing...
He's mid-chew.
Well,
no. Right. No, I was all right. I was waiting for you to talk, but it's okay.
This bit's a disaster. I hate you all.
I would have actually respected Rosberg for doing that kind of tactic. But the difference is he hasn't got the patience, and I do think Lewis would have been much more aggressive and gone for him. Of course, I'm going to say that because I'm a fan, but I just don't think there's any other way that any other driver in that position would have done anything different.
I believe that, with the way that today's Hamilton fans are, I mean, it's not all of them, but it seems to be growing ever more and more to be this way, is that all we'd get over Facebook or whatever is, oh my God, he should be penalised for that. This is definitely not good sportsmanship. Oh, no. And all that sort of rubbish.
Right, Ryan, I'm going to pick you up for that because I hear that same exact argument from both camps, from Lewis fans and from Lewis haters. Does that give away which side I'm on, that I call them haters? But I hear it from both sides, because what you get is you get the extreme people on each side making those extreme annoying arguments, and then you get the moderate people from those both sides saying, hey, why are you making that weird extreme argument? Alex, you're showing that hater stands for?
Having anger towards everyone reaching success.
There we go. Perfect.
Which I realise is backwards because of these stupid cameras.
Okay. I like it.
That's,
I like that.
That's why I couldn't read it.
Remembering that and stealing it.
I'll stick it on my Facebook and you can steal it.
Good man.
So I think, Ryan, we do see that from both sides. So I really am reluctant to put that on Hamilton fans or haters, as you were. But can we talk a little bit, Jake, as a management type yourself in charge of the illustrious Downforce Radio team, did you not think it was weird and naive of the Mercedes pit wall to tell Lewis Hamilton to effectively, what they were ordering him to do was give up the title now?
Yeah. In that moment, I genuinely feel that Lewis Hamilton had grounds to tear up his contract for 2017 and go and join someone else. Because what you're basically saying there is that, yeah, there's a few laps to go here, Lewis, but let's be honest here, mate, you can't win the championship. Nothing bad is going to happen to Rosberg's car. Move over and let him win. It's the right thing to do. For who? It's certainly not the right thing to do for Lewis. He's a racing driver. You're never going to give him that opportunity to just move over and let it all happen. I mean, would Senna have ever done that? Would Schumacher have ever done that? Would Hakkinen have ever done that? No, they wouldn't, because they were great champions. If you ask Lewis to bend over and let someone else take something from him, then you're no longer going for it. What did Senna always say that us Formula One fans always rave about? If you don't go for a gap, if you no longer go for a gap that exists, you're no longer a racing driver. That's even worse. In my book, just falling over, playing dead and letting Nico have it. No, you're a racing driver. You're going to push for every single second, no matter what it takes. If you're not that dedicated, then you shouldn't be doing it.
Thing is, the team have got a right to ask, because they don't care who wins the world championship. They just care.
No, they don't have a right to ask. If they say they're going to let their drivers race and the Constructors' Championship's already over, they don't have a right to ask. It's not their business. They've done everything they can to make it even and fair. It's up to the drivers on the track after that point. No more pit stops, no more intervention from the team. I'm sorry, that was idiotic, absolutely idiotic, to ask a racing driver fighting for a championship to give it to the other guy when they're in the same team. No, stupid and asinine.
Thing is, on the other side of that, though, they had a race win on the line with Vettel bearing down on them.
What difference would it have made? Would it have cost them the Constructors' Championship? No. You've done everything you can for your drivers to go for the championship. Let them race. Always, always, always let them race. There's enough bad blood in Formula One in terms of the media and the way it's presented to people. If you're going to falsify a championship, well, that's a bit like the fixing in the cricket scandal. You know, it was basically saying, well, it's not a sport anymore. We're just going to decide exactly who's going to win this race by consortium. It's a sport. If you're trying to take the sport away from people, then what's the point watching in the first place? They shouldn't have intervened. It's not their business anymore. They did their job. It's up to the drivers. The fact that they tried to then
simmer down,
with the
simmer down, Sanson. Stupid. Simmer down, stupid. Sanson. Let Ryan get in.
Well, I think even if Hamilton was to drive away or do what he did back up, I didn't think that Vettel would actually like overtake. If it's anything like the MotoGP paddock, which have like all of the drivers, riders have their own little like niches and respect and all that sort of stuff, I don't think Vettel would have overtaken Rosberg if it meant that he would lose the title. And I think if it weren't for the fact that Verstappen was chasing, if that was, say, Daniel Ricciardo chasing, I don't think Ricciardo would have made an attempt to overtake Rosberg if it meant that Rosberg would lose the title, because they're good friends.
Well, I don't agree with that. I think Ricciardo and Verstappen both would have gone for it, Chris.
Yeah, they would have done.
What Jake said earlier, that applies to that. We don't need to go through the whole thing again. We'll just cut.
No.
Okay, so I'm a little bit worried about the relationship between Lewis Hamilton and Mercedes at this point, because for me, it feels like they obviously would have known that he wasn't going to respond well to that. And Lewis Hamilton, in fact, his two radio calls that were broadcast were, I suggest you guys just let us race. That was number one. And the second one was, I love it. You could have just added nonchalant whistling to this to make it perfect. I'm in the lead right now. I'm happy where I am. There's no problem here. Move on, nothing to see. But I do fear what was the motivation of Mercedes kind of trying that for so long, for lap after lap, especially after it had been made clear that it wasn't going to happen. You know, maybe it would have been smart to do the thing of where cats fall down and then they just get up again and pretend nothing ever happened. As soon as they realized Lewis was going to ignore them, just kind of go, yeah, we were just letting them race. And they could have got a lot of credit for going, yep, it was a fair scrap. We were just letting them fight for the title. But actually, their irritation, especially from the front three guys in Mercedes, was pretty clear, with Toto saying, well, Lewis had two options. He could have either driven into the distance and shown how amazing he was, or he could have followed Christian Horner's instructions, laughed, and then said, maybe he should go and drive for him. And it just feels like there might be a little bit of a crack and a breakdown in that relationship. And Nico Rosberg's a world champion now, so maybe that's a bit more cash money, Alex.
Let me put it this way. Before, with all the engine stuff that Lewis has had this season, I'd say that, and I was always saying, there's no controversy, nothing. All those radio calls are basically, Lewis, give up, championship's over, it's Nico's. It could start those conspiracies again. And I'm not a conspiracy theorist person at all, but it did scream of, we want Nico to win this.
Oh, yeah, you say that's not conspiracy theorist, but that's going to light up the chat room, because that's exactly what conspiracy theorists would say. I mean,
they didn't want Rosberg to win the title. They just didn't want another collision. That's what they didn't want. They just didn't want all of the ignominy of, you know, two broken Mercedes at the side of a racetrack all over the newspapers tomorrow. That's the only thing they were concerned about. As far as they're concerned, they've already got a driver's world champion in one camp or the other. That all they didn't want was the two of them not to hit each other.
And a Mercedes employee did, in the cool down room, come in and greet Nico Rosberg by saying, next time get it done quicker. And I don't know if I'm wrong that that's a Mercedes employee, then I apologise, but it was in what I thought was the Mercedes garb. But I'm not feeling the conspiracy. I genuinely don't believe there was a conspiracy. I think Lewis just had some shock.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh.
Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Luck this year, I'll make that absolutely clear. But, you know, false balance, etc.
I thought it was Bernie Eccleston that said that in the cooldown room.
Oh, was it? Well, no, well, he's always said that he wanted Hamilton to win, surely.
I don't know, but he's always like the most hilarious. He's like got all this controversy around him, but he's probably one of the funniest blokes in the paddock because he comes out with just random stuff that he does not mean whatsoever, but he just says it because like he's Bernie Eccleston, so he can.
Okay,
Bernie gets a lot of stick, but I think the guy knows people who think Bernie is old and doesn't know what he's doing haven't got a clue. That man has been around the sport far too long. He knows exactly what he's saying when a camera goes in his face and exactly what's going to happen after it.
He knows how to get people talking about F1. Certainly, he knows exactly what to say to get people going. What? And that's a skill. You know, that's a skill to always be on point. To make Formula One something worth talking about, he's very, very quick to say exactly the right thing to be controversial. Okay, I mean, he's very, very talented at timing it right.
Chat room says
they say he doesn't know about media and things like that. He knows
he does.
He knows the media.
Yeah, he does. He doesn't know social media, but he knows the media.
Chat room says Lewis was more calm about it than you, Jake. Agreed, says Hannah Hassel. Compared to Jake, Lewis was so laid back he was almost horizontal. Chat room also suggesting that Mercedes owe Lewis Hamilton an apology for what they told him over the radio and that it was very, very wrong. There's some suggestion that Lewis Hamilton nearly left Mercedes after the Spain incident and somebody saying this entire championship was staged. I don't think I agree with that.
No, I don't agree with Mr. Gallimore on that one. At the end of the day, you may not like the way that the championship result has played out, but if you look at what has happened in each of the 21 races over the course of the year, you'd have to be the most incredible God-given writer to be able to make that play out over the course of the season as a fixed. It's not physically possible. No chance.
I tell you what a good radio call would have been, though, to Paddy Lowe from Paddy Lowe. Nico. World Championship and wins are on the line. Overtake Lewis Hamilton if he's going too slowly.
Yeah, I agree. At the end of the day, this is not just a pussyfoot around the circuit, bring it over the checkered flag. It's a race. At the end of the day, it's a race. You should be racing. And you could argue that Lewis shouldn't have backed Nico into Lewis, but by that same token, you could also argue that Nico shouldn't have been so cautious. He should have gone for it. Great champions go for it, don't they? You know, it's a double-edged sword, that argument, because you have to think about it in terms of, will Nico get another opportunity to win the championship against Lewis like this again? He might not. But from a championship winning point of view, you do whatever it takes to win the championship. Both of them did that today. I've got nothing against either of them.
Nico had absolutely no want to attack Lewis any sense today. He didn't want to go after him at all. He wanted Lewis to disappear into the distance and he'd happily just hold the gap. He didn't want to go for Lewis. And I don't see, and he was clever, you know, it's a Prost-like thing to do, just take the points that you need to take. But he did not want to get tangled with Lewis because he knows he can't fight with Lewis.
Last 2 points on this subject from Chris and Ryan.
See, I disagree with that, considering the moment he got Verstappen out of the way, he did fastest lap after fastest lap after fastest lap after fastest lap to close down the gap to Hamilton. But the problem is with these new cars is the moment you get into the slipstream, after a few laps, you're pretty much just like, you could see the moment they were getting onto the straight, he'd get into the DRS. But the thing is, he'd have to pop out to cool the tyres down into the engine. So pretty much he'd done like his tyres and everything over trying to catch up to Lewis. But then anything after that, he pretty much had nothing left because the cars aren't capable of doing it.
Sorry, Spanners.
He popped in all those laps to make a gap to Max because he knew he didn't want Max in between him and Lewis. He had no intention of going after Lewis. He just didn't want Lewis getting too far away and also didn't want the gap wanted to make the gap, sorry, to Max Verstappen. That's it.
Oh, Chris, I mean, I fully believe that Hamilton could have disappeared into the distance today at any point.
Yeah,
definitely. Yeah. That there's no question about it. He would have had this race completely in hand. I mean, just look at the way he was driving it. He wasn't taking anything out of that car. Had he been running at full pace, yeah, he'd have been 10 seconds down the road.
Okay, and Jake touched upon a point which was, and I don't like the term, but is Nico Rosberg a worthy champion? There's no way around it. Nico Rosberg is the 2016 world champion, whether you think he should be or not. I don't like the term, is he a worthy champion, because it's undefined. We don't know what worthy champion means. So to answer that, we would have to first define it and then decide. But that is the narrative. That has the question everyone has been asking. And what they really mean is, did Nico Rosberg, was he the better man over the course of the 2016 season? Was he a worthy champion? So I'll kick this off and I'll hand this over to the haters in the panel, because we are completely split among the SpannersReady.com contributors, among the panel. And Alex, we were part of the people. In fact, people left our Spanners Ready chat group over it. So, you know, we've lost some people like that, because it's a very highly strung, highly emotional, highly emotive subject. With people thinking that there's conspiracies coming in, people thinking their man was robbed. And now Nico Rosberg fans, and I will say I'm only accepting opinions from Nico Rosberg fans that were fans pre-2013, by the way, just as a caveat. Sorry, Ryan. So here's how I saw it, Jake, and I'll hand it over to you and Chris first. Lewis Hamilton had 10 wins. He had 12 poles. Nico had 9 wins, 8 poles. Lewis Hamilton was on the same form that he was in 2015, absolutely on fire. I think he's driven fantastically. He made up 2 huge gaps. For me, the story of the season is undeniably, in my biased Lewis Hamilton mind, Lewis had more failures, but Nico Rosberg never cracked under the pressure. But when Lewis was firing and his car was firing, he won. When Lewis had an error, Rosberg capitalized. Now, does that make him a worthy champion? Now, to me, that's the difference between, did he clean up the 9-ball rack, or did his opponent, you know, hit the black and have it ricochet in? They all count, but was it really a great win?
I personally think both arguments stack up. I think there were moments when Lewis dropped the ball, but I do also think that there were moments when Rosberg capitalized on a great opportunity. I think this year he has been a lot stronger than he has been in the last 2 years mentally. I think he has been in terms of his racecraft a bit better. Spain was a bit of a tipping point for me, because I think that was the moment when Rosberg really could have crumbled, or he could have dug deep and realized where he was making mistakes. And he became a bit more Schumacher ruthless. He was still a dirty driver, but he was a lot less clumsy with it. You know, he was able to put himself into a position where he could gain an advantage rather than screw up. So I think there were opportunities, though. You say, did Lewis drop the ball? Well, yes, but it wasn't just his car that dropped the ball. Look at Baku, look at Monza, look at Suzuka. Many, 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 many points that Lewis, not the car, Lewis cost himself. Rosberg cost himself points in over the course of the year. When you take everything, every little thing into consideration, you know, the times when Nico was not as good as Lewis in qualifying, when he's been able to gain an advantage in terms of strategy, when Lewis has absolutely monstered him on the track in racecraft, all these little things, you have to combine them together. And if Rosberg is still able to be there at the end of the year to challenge Lewis, then yes, he is a worthy champion. If he's done the job over 21 races and he's still there to fight for it, of course he is. This isn't even a debate.
I'll go to Chris next. I would just say, though, it's been annoying me for ages, because the team principal of Mercedes came out and said in Monza and I think Singapore or one other race that was a clutch issue. The clutch was not functioning properly. So at least some of those starts are down to a clutch malfunction. And the two races that he mentioned, it was the same power unit between Monza and I think it was Singapore. But people seem to sort of willfully ignore that. Because it wasn't, you're saying it's all these little things. It was lots of little things, Chris, and
yeah,
some big
I have to agree. And, you know, the starts thing is complicated, because we've had mixed comments from both the drivers and the teams about what's been the issue. Was it the driver? Was it the team when it comes to these sorts of things? And the debate gets quite hostile unnecessarily as well between Lewis and Nico. So I have to kind of second what Jake was saying. You know, Nico has been on fine form. It's the best he's ever been driving. I think Lewis has been really, really good as well, but I don't think it's been his best year. I think that 2015 was his best year. He didn't seem to have as many off races.
Okay, so you're saying Nico Rosberg has earned it. Okay, so give me, what's your main example of where Nico Rosberg has really has had it head-to-head with Lewis Hamilton and has just beaten him, just nailed him? And you know.
Japan, best example. Lewis at no point in that weekend showed any ability of beating him. At Singapore would be another one. And yes, Nico has taken advantage of some of Lewis's misfortunes, but equally, Lewis has taken advantage of Nico's misfortunes, and that's the way a championship goes.
So you're saying it's kind of balanced. So are you saying that you think the amount of misfortunes this season has been even?
I have totted up errors that the drivers have made and stuff that's gone wrong for them that wasn't their fault. And I'm not going to lie, mate. It's between each of them. It's one in it. You know, I've counted.
That is bizarre. Okay, I don't want to flame this, but to me, that sounds bizarre that you think that for bad luck and mechanical failures, Hamilton's had one extra bad thing happen.
No, not just mechanical failures, unfortunate things that have cost them points that weren't their fault. In races, I might point out as well, because now I wouldn't necessarily throw in China and Russia, the MGUH failures straight away, because we don't actually know if Lewis would have won those races had he had a clean weekend. So I've got like a little asterisk next to those. You know, you would have said a bare minimum second for China, but in Russia, he finished second anyway.
It's interesting because a lot of the conversation here has been about whether Nico is a worthy champion, and there's a lot of debate on the chat room on Facebook and on the YouTube stream. I don't want to go on forever and ever, but it's interesting when you talk to the hardcore Formula One fans I'm appealing to here in particular. In the 50s, we had a champion called Mike Hawthorn.
50s.
Now, Mike Hawthorn was not the best driver over the course of the year in the eyes of the hardcore fans. Stirling Moss was. Did Moss win the championship? No. Denny Holm in the 60s. Up against Jack Brabham.
You cannot say that because people have undeservedly won a championship before, that therefore then makes Nico Rosberg a worthy champion.
I'm not saying that. You've missed my point here completely. What I'm saying is people are saying that Nico Rosberg is not a worthy champion because of what's happened this year. Well, then how can you then claim that these drivers that we hold up as legends, like Hawthorn, Holm, James Hunt, Keke Rosberg, Jacques Villeneuve in the 90s, you could argue, Kimi Raikkonen in 2007, only won the title because Lewis Hamilton binned it into the gravel in the pits in Shanghai. He would have had that championship on a plate otherwise. You can't make that same argument without taking those into consideration. You'd call none of those guys legends?
No. What,
not even Kimi or James Hunt or Jacques Villeneuve?
I think Kimi's a legend. Kimi had one good season that was given to him due to issues with Spygate.
But they're world champions. Could you list all of those and say they were all rubbish world champions?
Now, I wasn't there in 1976, but when I watched Rush, I did wonder at the end, why is he celebrating so hard? Like, why would you be super happy when your main competitor has missed, you know, a big chunk of the season? Yeah, you can
because
be happy.
Formula One is Formula One.
Yeah, but it's happy, but it's the difference, like you said, in snooker, it's the difference between getting a 147 and getting a bit of a fluky frame. They all count, but when you get the fluky frame, you tap the table, nod at your opponent, get your pint and get ready for the next season. You don't jump up and down whooping, you know.
It's sport. It's sport. At the end of the day, you do whatever it takes. It doesn't matter how you win, it's how you win. That's the kind of mindset you have to be a world champion in Formula One. And Nico is part of that mold.
Ryan?
Yeah, with the... I forgot who it was now. The Stirling Moss and Hawthorn. Well, effectively, Moss was champion, but because he was such a gentleman, because Hawthorn made a mess up and then came back on himself, he said, no, fair chap, he should be champion. What he did, I don't see anything wrong with it, and so gave up his championship. And you don't really see Hamilton doing that, would do that nowadays, but anyway.
But why is the achievement any less? I'll tell you the reason why. It's because there's more opportunity for people with these outrageous opinions to express them and voice them.
Everybody, everybody shut up. Because we haven't broken the duck of having no Americans on Missed Apex since it first began. Introducing live from a rehearsal in New York City, it's Matt T. Rumpus. How's it going, Matt? No, you're on mute, buddy.
And we can't hear him.
Trying to figure out I'm hitting my... Is that better?
Yeah, I've got you. How's it going, Matt? We are in the middle of a massive argument, so let's get your opinion quickly. Was Lewis's...
The correct one.
Was Lewis's tactics dirty and horrible? And secondly, is Nico Rosberg a worthy champion? We'll get your opinions on that and then argue about them offline.
Sounds like a plan. Were his tactics awful and horrible? No. I think they were perfectly reasonable and fair and well within the rules of Formula One. Absolutely. No problem.
Unsportsmanlike,
and I would say.
Unsportsmanlike?
No, not at all. Not in the least. Not in the least. Not only was it not unsportsmanlike, it was utterly expected. Lewis was going to do everything he could to win the championship. We all knew this, and that's exactly what he did. I don't know how anyone could have a problem with that. And more to the point, for those people who were Rosberg Fosse, all one of them, I would guess, on this show, it actually made Rosberg look a lot better because it put him under tremendous pressure throughout the whole of the race. If Lewis had driven off and Nico had driven off, it would have just been, you know, like another day. It would have been like practically, you know, a tire test or something as far as they were concerned. And instead, by Lewis backing everybody up, not only did it put Rosberg under a lot of pressure, it put Mercedes under a lot of pressure too, but it made the race a lot more interesting. So I think it was a win-win-win, personally.
It definitely did. So now, Matt, Nico Rosberg is the 2016 Formula One world champion. I know you and me have not liked the term worthy. Is he a worthy world champion?
Yeah, you know, I mean, you can argue about whether he's a better driver than
good,
Lewis.
We will, yes.
But if you cross the finish line and win the championship, yeah. Absolutely. He did enough to earn the championship. I mean, granted, he put himself in a position where he spent the whole last part of the season just not losing rather than winning, which I think was different to 2014 and certainly to 2008, for example.
Did he put himself in that situation or was he gifted that situation?
He was in that situation. Was he gifted it? I mean, you could argue Lewis's Malaysia engine explosion changed everything from a points point of view, but you could also argue, you know, the bad start in Baku. There were a couple of times where Lewis took some points off the table too. It was a situation he found himself in, and he got it across the finish line.
Matt,
I
have to say, you're looking incredibly cool there in your orange sunglasses and your goatee. Where are you now? You're rehearsing for a gig. You were going to plug something for our American fans to go and see?
Yeah, absolutely. Anybody who happens to be in New York City on December 9th, come see me at the Bitter End.
You look very, Bono-like.
Yeah, someone's mentioned the fact you look like Bono.
You're not the first person to tell me that, believe it or not. My boss thinks the same thing, so.
Okay.
But those shades are just on point, those shades.
Yeah. I like them.
Okay, Matt, before we lose you to the gods of internet, we'll say thank you very much for popping by. Have a good rehearsal, and I will see you probably next on Spanner's Log.
Absolutely. Well, the rehearsal's done. I got the concert in about an hour, so. And I got to go find some food now because all the concessions here are closed, and I brought nothing with me.
Good times. It's good to know your admin, Matt. We will catch you later.
All right, thanks. Bye. Take care.
Okay, let's get back to yelling at each other. Chris Stevens.
Right, so something I was going to bring up before Matt came in was I took a look at their 17 podiums because both drivers have had 17 podiums this season. And I counted up who had more thirds and who had more seconds between them because we know that Lewis had 10 wins and Nico 9. Interestingly, Lewis Hamilton had two more third places and Nico had two more second places. So that's where your small points gains come there, because that's 6 points he's made up there.
Okay, you and Jake have both talked about small points gains, and I will make the case that, guys, you've had to work very, very hard to explain away the big points gains, which are, yes, we don't know the end result, but he twice got demoted to 10th place on the grid. He had to take a 20 placed good penalty in Spa. He had an engine blow up in Malaysia, which not only cost him 25 points, it promoted Nico Rosberg up a place. And fair enough, he did get punted by Vettel at the beginning. But there was some big, big hits he took on points. If you conservatively say that cost him 40 points, not conservatively, you could probably stretch that to 50. Let's not even consider the issues he had in qualifying, like when in Monaco he had an engine issue that stopped him getting pole. He had several practice issues. I think Rosberg had one practice issue in Austria. It's a big, big points gap, and Rosberg sneaked it. He sneaked the title by 5 points, guys. It's a big deficit to explain away with the odd dodgy start.
Yes, yeah. And no. Yes and no. I don't see how that's any more a dramatic way to end the season with Rosberg stealing a championship away than I can see your point to me. I wanted at one point to use the Nigel Mansell thing from 1986. You know, that was a dead cert, and Alain Prost won another title, and that was a worthy championship win. No, it wasn't. Mansell was way ahead of him and had beaten him fair and square. So by the same thing. But I suppose what you're trying to say here is that because they're in the same team, that sort of thing shouldn't really happen.
Well,
and therefore,
not
really should have had that championship on a plate.
It's not that it shouldn't happen. It's well within the realms of plausibility. It's unlikely that all those issues happen to one car rather than the other identical car, but it's well within random chance. So it just happened that way. And the timing of it allowed Rosberg to then dictate the season. Had they all been at the back end, and Rosberg had been under more points pressure in the season, he would have had to have taken more risks, gone for more wins. But he was in a situation where he was able to cruise in and go for second places.
I think, though, you could argue and say, well, Lewis should have been world champion using that argument. But I'm actually quite, and this is from a Lewis Hamilton fan here, I quite like the fact that Nico has won it. Not just from a sporting point of view, the fact that, oh, it's Lewis all the time and Nico can't win anything, now that Nico has.
Yeah.
2017 is going to be all about how Lewis deals with this. Lewis has never been beaten by a teammate, properly been beaten by a teammate when he's been at a team. You could argue Jensen beat him at McLaren in one season for points. Yeah, he did. But again, you know, circumstances went against Lewis. So for a championship fight, Lewis has never been beaten head to head by a teammate. Now he has. I can't wait to see how he deals with this, because I think that will make or break him as a racing driver.
Ryan.
I really want to be in the front row when that happens.
Let's hear from Ryan.
Yeah, I got a couple of points. One of them regarding Lewis and mechanical problems during the season. Essentially, some of them could be actually down to Lewis being more aggressive on the car.
Have you got any
like
evidence of that, Ryan?
The engine. No, I don't. But the thing is, everyone's like, oh my God, yeah, the engine's blowout. It's automatically, that's the team's fault. But essentially, at the end of the day, if you drive a car too hard or beyond its limits, then it's going to break. Now, Nico potentially can be driving it a little bit more conservatively, which also leads to the end of the day. I know that's what people don't want, because people want to see people pushing it to the limit. But if Nico's more conservative, it means that it's going to pay dividends towards the end. But the other point I got regarding Rosberg being a title winner, when I was looking at it, I've been wanting it purely because one of the reasons is Rosberg's been at Mercedes since day one, and he's been through thick and thin back when Mercedes were sort of struggling in the midfield sort of thing, and only just managing to grasp a win a season or something like that. So he's been there since day one, like pushing hard and hard, and finally he's got it, and I think it's well deserved.
Alex?
All right, so on the Lewis drives his car too hard rubbish.
Well done.
In the old days, I would tend to agree with you. Unfortunately, in days of telemetry, where the engineers know absolutely everything that is going on with those cars, if any driver's driving was doing something to detrimentally hurt the car, they would engineer that out of the driver's driving. So I think the whole Lewis drives cars too hard is a complete and utter moot point.
And did we not find out in Patronus that there was some engine oil stuff going on, Chris? That was not his fault. Yeah. So maybe we can mitigate against that. Chat room doesn't agree with you, Ryan. I suggest you have a little scroll through there. Be nice, chat room. Be nice, Chris.
It's a chat room. They're not going to be nice.
I wanted to address the thing of luck. Because luck is something that's been brought out quite a lot. And, you know, people who say that Nico's just won this on luck, I would like to defer you to the 2012 championship finale that those of you will remember that Sebastian Vettel won in Brazil. I would just like to say, had it been a warmer day, there is no way he would have made the end of that race. Talk about luck. Actually, talk about luck. Let's go ahead and talk about the 2008 championship finale. That is about as lucky as luck gets. 2010 as well, another Vettel one.
2007 as well.
Yes. Luck always comes down and plays a part in this.
There is a difference. Firstly, you're talking about an open championship between different teams. And yes, luck played factors. There was lots of things that happened. Singapore, fuel hose, etc. But look, we're talking about two drivers here who were so far ahead of the field that level of imbalance and luck was able to make the difference. Because had they been a team that didn't have such a huge advantage, he would have been under pressure from the rest of the field. But Rosberg literally had no one to race against in the season. When Lewis was there with no issue, he generally won. And when he wasn't there, Rosberg was out on his own.
There is a crucial difference. Sorry, Alex, I know you want to get in, but there is a crucial difference between then and now. And this is when you have a dominant car and the championship is going down between two drivers from the same team, then it's not the good days that make a difference. It's how you deal with the bad ones.
Correct.
So take a look at Rosberg in Malaysia, still coming away with a podium. Really great there.
Yeah.
Compare that to, this may not be a perfect example, but Lewis in Baku after he binned it in qualifying and didn't make the advantages up he needed in the race.
Correct.
So there are other examples to that as
well. Are we really going to ignore the difference between the issue that Rosberg had and Hamilton had in Baku? I don't want to go over that.
No.
Okay, but okay, let's talk about how you react on the bad days when the conditions don't suit you. All worthy champions, all the greats, they're fantastic in the wet, aren't they? Silverstone, Monaco, Brazil. Now, I'm not chat rooms saying that I'm bashing Rosberg. I'm not. He can't take it away from him. He's the champion. He did everything he needed to do. You can only play the team that you're up against. You can thrash Action and Stanley. It's no less of a victory because they were there. But when it came down to the rain races, he was embarrassing. He was embarrassingly slow against Lewis Hamilton. In Monaco, he was seventh place and in danger of being lapped. In Silverstone, he lost out to Max Verstappen. In Brazil, again, barring tactics, on pace, he lost out to the second best team that's a second down the road behind them. He has not performed well, and I'll make my final case, in wheel-to-wheel combat this year, he has hit Kimi Raikkonen, Max Verstappen, Lewis Hamilton, when they were nail-on accidents he's caused. You can't point to Nico Rosberg's season and say he has driven fantastically. I'm sorry, he just hasn't, Alex.
Yeah, but you can't. Well, sorry, Ed, but you can't do that about Lewis either, because you could say the same things about Lewis in different contexts.
Okay, so Nico is the 2016 world champion. Who in this room and the chat room believes Nico is the best driver in Formula One?
No, of course he isn't.
Who believes he's better than Daniel Ricciardo, who came third?
He's not.
Who believes he's better than Vettel, who came fourth?
He's not.
Who believes he's better than Max Verstappen? Who believes he's better than even Kimi Raikkonen? I don't think he is. So
you've either got to say he's had an absolute blinder this season, which I think I've successfully demonstrated he hasn't, or we've just had one of those seasons, a complete freak of circumstances that's allowed him to do it. And given that chance and given that ability, he's taken full advantage of it. Can't take that away from him. But come on, let's not give this some a prominence and merit that it doesn't have.
The praise I will give Nico, he has been the perfect, if not the best, number two driver.
Yeah.
That's to say, because, I mean, for example, Mark Webber, perfect example, made Sebastian Vettel's championships look better because he couldn't just follow Vettel home every single race. That car was so much more dominant than it actually looked because Webber couldn't get the job done. What the brilliance is of a number two driver, of a good number two driver, is if the number one driver, which is Lewis, can't make it work, the number two driver is there to pick up the pieces. That's what he has done perfectly. He hasn't won this championship by being the best driver. He's won this championship by being the best number two.
Yeah, I'd go as far as to kind of back up what you're saying there, Alex, and to justify what you're saying, Spanners, in that if you look at people like Jody Scheckter, who won the championship for Ferrari, that was the best car, but Gilles Villeneuve was the better driver. And then again, you know, it just happens to be that circumstance plays a better hand to Rosberg this season than Lewis. Luck is something that everybody justifies as, you know, the be all and end all. Oh, well, it's only luck that Nico Rosberg is the champion. Luck is not just something that quantifies Formula One. And there are people who believe in luck and people who believe that you make your own luck. The thing is, you have to take the cards that you're dealt with. There's nothing else you can do as a Formula One driver, as a person, as a human. And I think people automatically assume that the human element in Formula One is not what makes the difference, because the cars are the best cars on the grid. They should be perfect every single time. It doesn't work like that. You know, these cars are not identical, the two Mercedes cars. You can't make identical Formula One cars anymore. You just can't do it. I don't think you've ever been able to do it, because the human element changes it. And at the end of the day, a racing driver has to accept the cards that they're dealt with and deal with that. Nico has been brilliant at dealing with the cards that has been given him this year. Now, does that make him better than the drivers that Alex was talking about there, the Verstappens, the Raikkonens, the Alonsos, you know, the Ricardos? No, it probably doesn't. And pure pace in a karting race where they've all got the same equipment, Nico probably would be fifth or sixth or seventh. But he had the best equipment. He made good use of it. And no racing driver anywhere in the world would be proud of themselves if they didn't do that. You're given the best equipment, of course you go and win the championship. You damn sure make sure you win the championship, because you'll never get another chance to do it.
Chris, final-ish word.
Maybe he isn't the fastest driver on the grid, is he? I certainly don't think he's faster than Lewis Hamilton. I've always thought that Lewis is the more naturally gifted racing driver. Does that mean he is a less worthy champion as we're giving this stick? Should he be any less proud of himself? No way. He should be ecstatic with what he's done this year. And yeah, even he does have the best car. There's no way you don't find yourself in a car like that if you don't deserve it.
Correct.
That's my final word on it.
Okay then, boys. So I think we've all agreed then that it was a massive fluke and he's not a worthy... when we started having...
I agree, let's end there.
When we started having a chat about this straight after the race, you know, in the WhatsApp groups and stuff like that, I was delighted because the range of opinions was fantastic. And isn't it fantastic that we get to watch and enjoy a sport where such a range of opinions can be not only valid to us, but we can sit here and back arguments up and go backwards and forwards. And when you're in a room full of intelligent people that can disagree respectfully, you are indeed in a privileged position. So Jake, you think worthy champion. Alex, you think probably not. Ryan does, because he hates Lewis Hamilton because he's a traitor. Chris, you think he is a worthy champion, and the luck element has been overplayed?
Yeah, more or less.
Yeah, and I tend to err to the fact that this has been rather a freak season. Rosberg's done nothing wrong. Rosberg's, apart from, you know, all the examples of the wrong stuff he did, I guess. but I mean, what I mean is he's done nothing wrong. As him as a driver, with his ability, he's taken the title home. And I'm sure that's not an easy thing to do. Let's give the last word to Ryan Ferris.
I'd say Rosberg won't be a true champion until he wins his second.
I thought you were pro Rosberg.
I know that, but to be honest, you get your first championship, but you got to prove yourself by getting your second one.
You flip-flop there. I don't know if we can get on with that. Okay, before we go to the podium, I want to find out what everyone's up to over the winter. Now, Jake, for your benefit, I'm about to play a bumper, okay?
Okay.
This is Downforce Radio.
And it's the bumper of your station. What is Downforce Radio up to before we catch up with you again for the Formula One season? Motorsport doesn't stop just because F1 does.
Indeed it doesn't. And on Danfoss Radio, we've got a lot of stuff coming up. We're still doing our weekly shows through the course of the winter. So we're actually adjusting the Pitboard program that runs on Thursday nights at 8 p.m. so that it's a bit more motorsport based rather than just pure Formula One. And there's a lot more comedy that's going to be brought into it. We want to make it the mock the week. Have I got news for you of Formula One and motor racing? That's what we want to do. So we're going to get a little bit closer to that format, 8 p.m. Thursdays. Make sure you do that. And then also we're getting ourselves ready for the Downforce Radio Awards for 2016. It's a very, very important award ceremony. Lots of drivers in the British motorsport scene being honoured, including the Henry Surtees Team Racer of the Year and the Kia Mela Under 13 Racer of the Year. That's taking place at the Simply Race venue in Milton Keynes on December the 17th. And everyone is welcome. It's a tenner to get in, and you can hang out with some of the greatest racing drivers in Great Britain this year. I mean, it's such an amazing opportunity. We're doing a raffle on the night as well. All the proceeds are going to the National Autistic Society. That's going to be a great winter for us. And then obviously after the award ceremony, we're going to continue with the build up to the new motorsport season, not just in F1, but in all sorts of other disciplines as well. There'll be some live coverage of things. We'll be at the Autosport Show for all 4 days. Hope you can join us there for that as well. There's so much coming. If you want to keep up with it, at Downforce Radio on Twitter and on Facebook as well, facebook.com/Downforce Radio. Please, please, please like and follow. We'll give you as much as you ask for.
Do I have to pay the tenner to get into the awards thing? You're gonna charge me? Come on.
I might let you in, Spanners, because otherwise you'll hit me. But everyone else, yeah, you're going to get charged.
Chris Stevens.
I know, Ben, I don't get charged.
Chris Stevens, what are you up to over the winter?
Plenty of content still going to be coming your way at formulaspy.com. I'm also launching my own website now about TV, film, music, video games, or media, all that sort of stuff.
What's it called?
It's called Millennium Harvest. I've mentioned it on the podcast before. There was a bit of a delay after I mentioned it, that podcast, because that was quite a while ago. But I thought it'd be best to launch it after the motorsport season is done, when I've got a bit more time on my hands. So, that's coming in like the next couple of weeks or so. Definitely, before Christmas. What else am I doing? For an end of season awards type thing, I'm getting together with a couple of friends again that I used to do a podcast with last year, and we're sort of getting together and making a one-off thing. That's pretty much my plans so far.
So a bit of nerd culture. I'm in. I'm all in on movies and games. Ryan, any commentating planned over the winter?
There might be some stuff, but you know, during the winter I'll probably be locked in my mum's basement twiddling my thumbs till the season starts again, you know.
Thumbs,
as always.
Thumbs, sure, thumbs. Okay, but you can follow him at ferret115. That's E-T, not anything
else.
No,
it is I-T, not E-T.
Oh, okay, there we go. And now, Alex, you, me, and Ryan are going to be, in January, competing at aforementioned Milton Keynes Simply Race in their... You tell me.
So Simply Race are putting on the SRTCC, which is the Simply Race Touring Car Championship, which is being done in TCR cars, which are front-wheel drive touring cars, basically. And the first round is in February?
February 5th. February 5th.
February the 5th, that was it. And it's going to be at Suzuka. I've been there. I did 8 laps, and I was rubbish because I'd hate the front-wheel drive cars. But I'll get there in the end. I will find some pace.
Well, you're representing Missed Apex Podcast at that event.
I am representing Missed Apex Podcast, which I only told my wife about today, and she looked a bit surprised. So we'll go on from that.
Well, that's because had led me to believe you were good, but Bradley Philpott tells me you are some 10 seconds off the general pace.
Brad thinks I'm rubbish at everything, so don't listen to a word Brad says. I'll find the pace. It won't be a problem. However, the other thing that I will massively be underperforming in is the British Rental Car Championship, which is on the weekend of the 20th of January.
For the win!
Held also in Milton Keynes, but at Formula Fast. And there is going to be commentary. It's actually going to be streamed live on YouTube, so you can watch me underperform and watch Rubens Bootens probably win 4 straight titles on the truck.
Am I allowed to come along and watch it in some
You are more than welcome, as long as you don't drop chocolate in Luke's car again.
Okay, I won't do that.
Ouch, big burn. So back to the sim racing on February the 5th. You are leading up the Missed Apex team. Ryan, I believe, is on your team as well. I can't remember who the third person is. He's going to kill me.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, he's on your team. And then I am in the SpannersReady.com team, headed up by editor Stephen Williams. So we'll be up against you. And our hated evil enemies are Downforce Radio, headed up by Jake Sanson. You are to take them out on site. That is a team order. Take out Jake Sanson.
Going down. You won't get a chance because we'll have Scott Woodwiss and Piers Pryor miles ahead of all of you. So sort that out. Not happening.
Whatever. I beat Woodwiss online one time with one race when he crashed.
We will win the championship so beautifully. It will be like Nico Rosberg did it.
You can't plan to fluke it. Okay, let's go on to some awards. Okay, guys, it's time for some final awards of the season. We are going to do, of course, a season wrap-up in the coming weeks. We also are going to have a BadgerGP.com takeover of Missed Apex podcast. Very, very excited for that. So, guys, who was your thing of the weekend? Keep it brief without yelling, Jake. Who was your thing of the weekend?
Force India wrapping up the fourth place in the Constructors' Championship.
Absolutely. Well done, Jeansy.
Ferrari actually getting one strategy call right for the first time in about 5 years.
Well, if you bet on red and black, then yeah, you're going to win on one of them. Ryan, who was your thing of the weekend?
I was going to say Jensen Button's Braun-esque helmet.
How cool did that look against the black Ferrari? Chris, Sparkles?
I was going to say Force India, but Jake took it. So I'll say Verstappen's recovery from a spin on the first corner.
Not bad.
And my thing of the weekend is Nico Rosberg. But, you know, obviously I've not been his best mate so far on
this
podcast.
You are so desperate to get the stream back on your side.
No. At least two of them agree with me. No, because he did something amazingly cool, which is go past Parc Fermé, do donuts on the start finish straight after you've won a world championship, get on your car and celebrate it there on the track like that. That was amazingly cool. All right, then let's go on to the bad thing.
Oh no, you missed the apex.
Ryan, who missed the apex for you?
I don't know, because so much happened and I've drank gin since.
Ryan missed the apex.
Yeah, I missed the apex. No, I think Jensen Button's right front suspension.
That's
it
true.
Actually hit the apex, but you know.
Yeah, that definitely hit the apex, Jeansy.
My brain's gone. I had something and then I listened to Ryan talking about gin. I've forgotten.
He is hypnotic, isn't he? You just look at him and go, How does that be?
He's got the munchies.
The Mercedes pit wall. They should have just left them all alone today and just let them go on with it.
Just let
it made everything that happened today look bad because they wouldn't shut up.
Yeah, cheap.
Chris, who missed the apex?
Ferrari with Kimi Raikkonen. Bad strategy.
Yeah, hardly new. Didn't we say that we were banning Ferrari from getting the Missed Apex Award because it was becoming too frequent? Jake, who missed the apex for you?
Sebastian Vettel for getting so close to the back of Nico Rosberg and then not going for it. The pansy.
And
all that tension, all that build-up, and nothing.
Yeah. Mine goes to David Coulthard, who I think is brilliant, by the way. I think he's a great presenter, and seeing as he's a very powerful man, actually, he's behind the scenes, I think we'll find that he will probably own Formula One at some point. But it was cringy that he made them shake hands again because he was in the way. That was so awkward.
Yeah, that was pathetic.
I swear, like, every time it was David Coulthard was chatting and then Rosberg or someone was relating to Hamilton, it was almost like he stepped aside and it turned into the David Coulthard's Jeremy Kyle show. And they were just there like explaining their emotions and all that sort of stuff.
How do you feel? Get off. I'm going to hit you in a minute.
Who has everyone done their missed apex? Oh, do we have a Daddy I Want a Pony? Has anybody got a Daddy I Want a Pony? Hang on, let me play it.
Daddy, I want a pony. And I want it now.
Alex, then Jake.
Paddy Lowe really getting whingy and whiny at Lewis for doing what any champion would do.
Jake?
I'm going to say it again, Paddy Lowe. I'm sorry, but it needs to be said twice because he really should have shut his mouth.
Now, they didn't play it, but apparently Nico Rosberg said, you should let me past Lewis Hamilton.
Yeah, they did play
to get away, and then I promise that I will let him back past me.
Yeah, that is not something you can really say, Nico. We're not going to believe that. That was just trying, scratching it. clutching at straws.
He's either clutching at straws, has shown a bizarre understanding of Lewis Hamilton's mentality, or it was really out of place. Chris?
I've got one from the GP2.
Go.
It's Jordan King, and he did a Kimi Raikkonen. He said, leave me alone.
And wow.
Okay, but we don't criticize Jordan King here, especially as we're trying to get him to come back on once he becomes a Formula One driver. So let's.
It was great. It was funny. We all like that.
excellent, guys. Thank you very, very much for joining us on what could have been reduced to more yelling. We could have been more aggressive. We actually do have a comment of the week.
Comment of the week.
And it comes from our Facebook group chat. We had a thread on there for the race review. We had hundreds of comments, which we have had for the last couple of weeks. I think it's a really nice place to hang out and chat during the Grand Prix. So come and join us at the Missed Apex podcast group on Facebook. And it came from Hannah Hassel talking about Ferrari's strategy, saying, yeah, considering Ferrari's strategy department is Jeremy Clarkson, an orangutan, and Boise from Only Fools and Horses, it's not bad. And that just leaves me to say, I hope you've enjoyed being with us this season and that you'll stay with us for next season. So to make sure we don't lose you over the winter, can I please ask that you subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or your podcast app? If you don't have a podcast app for Android, I suggest Dogcatcher or Pocket Cast. Subscribing means that you will be automatically given and gifted each episode as it comes, and you don't have to rely on my woeful publicity and social media skills. Also, we think the live stream moving to YouTube has been a fantastic success. It's a pretty fun place to hang out. It's on the Spanners Ready channel on YouTube. You can get the link from spannersready.com/livestream. And if you subscribe there, then you'll get a notification every time we go live. And finally, if you think you're going to miss me and Matt Trumpets over the winter, then fear not. You can listen to me and Matt Trumpets on a brand new podcast called Spanners Log, which will be kind of an informal, topical diary podcast. Follow me at Spanners Ready on Twitter to get details of that. Over the winter, Missed Apex Podcast will be with you at least every 2 weeks, keeping it going, keeping the feed alive before a riveting 2017 season. Join us for the BadgerGP.com takeover, our own Missed Apex and SpannersReady.com season review, and remember that wounds heal, chicks dig scars, and glory lasts forever. This has been Missed Apex. So, are we all still friends or what?
Yeah.
I don't know. Sounded a bit emotional.
No, definitely not.
I don't know if I like Ryan
Standard
anymore.
Four spanners, so nothing's changed as far as I'm concerned.
Jeansy, it's just you and me, mate. It's just you and me. Screw these guys.
They're not real fans. They haven't got a clue. Oh.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.